All right, friends, we are back, and we are in the final module of the Identity Server Microsoft Virtual Academy, and Brock has brought us through this epic journey where we've done login and logout, and now we have the ability to have this application talk to Identity Server, gets its token. Now we're going to go and call out to external web APIs on that user's behalf.
Exactly.
All right.
That's the next step.
Let's do it.
So as I mentioned earlier, when you first have your client app communicate with Identity Server just for authentication, you're getting one type of token called an identity token.
Okay.
And the intended recipient is the MVC app.
Okay.
So the MVC app trusts the identity token.
Okay. Right.
Then we now want to call the API on behalf of the user, as you said. There's a new type of token for that called an access token.
Cool.
And the access token is where is what's used at the web API.
Mm-hmm.
So the web API is the recipient of the access token.
Do I tell the web API my identity token and my access token, or do I just need the access token?
No, that's the exact reason I was pointing that out, is because those are distinct tokens for distinct audiences.
Okay, so let me ask this dumb analogy.
Mm-hmm.
I go into the DMV, I show the person at the front desk my identity.
Mm-hmm.
That then allows me to pull the little token with my number that they're going to call later.
Okay.
So I've identified myself,
yep.
Which that has then allowed me to pull the number, which at that point I move past that front desk lady,
right.
And now I'm inside the DMV, I am authenticated, and I sit around and I wait for that token.
Right.
I don't have to show my ID again, I just hand them my number when I get to the next step.
In a sense, that's exactly what we're talking about here, because you've gone and issued you've provided your username and password at the token server,
mm-hmm.
and it's giving you then something else,
mm-hmm.
which is enough of a proof of your identity and that can be used at the API in this case.
How long can it use? Is it per web app? It can be saved?
All configurable,
mm-hmm.
okay? But the access token usually has some sort of lifetime.
Okay.
And the intent is that you have to periodically go back to the token server to get new access tokens to make sure you're still allowed and that the app is still legitimately allowed mm-hmm. to act on your behalf, okay? So there are some lifetime management issues that you mm-hmm. do have to consider.
How granular and how thoughtful do I need to be about this? Is it a token to let me access this web API, or is it a token to let me save data versus a token to let me read data?
So the granularity of the token mm-hmm. is really up to your design.
Hmm.
Okay, so Google, for example, they have lots of different APIs. Mm-hmm. They have like a calendar API.
Right.
Okay? And so when you write an app that uses the calendar API on behalf of a user,
mm-hmm.
when you go, when the app goes and asks for tokens, it could ask for the access to the read-only calendar functionality mm-hmm. or the read-write functionality
okay.
of the calendar. So in other words, those two things are called scopes.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a term we heard earlier because
right.
scopes represent the resources that Identity Server is protecting. So the new type of scope that we're talking about here is an API scope.
Mm.
Okay, so that's an overloaded term in the protocols. It is definitely a little bit confusing, but
sure.
But anyway, so that's the point. So you get to design your own scopes.
Okay, so that's good. So if I'm building an API for my shopping cart,
mm-hmm.
I can have adding something to the shopping cart might be one level. Actually checking out and taking money can be another. It's totally
right.
business logic type level.
Sure, and you could create different scopes for different APIs
cool.
or multiple scopes with a single API with different access
like
level.
Like the read-only versus
exactly.
read. All right, that's good to know.
So anyway, what we'll do here is we'll go introduce a single API because that's what I have here for my demo code.
Mm-hmm.
We have another project with this web API.
Okay.
Right now, if we look into this, this is, again, a separate hosted web API.
Okay.
It is using ASP.NET Core.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as you had mentioned before, this API or even this MVC app could be written in Java or something else, still protected by Identity Server.
Mm-hmm.
So it just happens that this sample is using ASP.NET Core.
Cool.
So in our startup code, this again is going to look very similar. This is actually kind of a trimmed down sample because we don't have any UI.
Right.
Okay. We don't need views in our API. It just has straight up MVC, so which we have that. In here, then, I have a simple test controller.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using attribute routing to say, yeah, that's the test API, and I'm basically just saying, hello, world.
Cool.
Okay?
Pretty sophisticated.
Yeah, very sophisticated. So when I run this right now, and I go to that endpoint called test,
mm-hmm.
right? Great. We were able to hit this through the browser. That's not really the
so
real
place.
So this is
an unauthenticated one, no claims.
Correct. Right now, I have no security.
All right.
Okay. My MVC app, then, if I run it, let's go get the user logged in,
mm-hmm.
just because that will enable the button. that shows you calling the API. So we have a little thing here to call the API.
All right.
We invoke it, and it's also calling the same thing.
Okay, cool. And that's the result of that API just dropped into a div.
Exactly.
All right.
No security at this point, though. Okay? So I'm just showing you that it works.
That it works.
Okay? Now, obviously, how do we secure these guys? You can drop in an authorize attribute, right? That basically says you have to be authenticated to hit the API.
But that authorization at this point is still kind of up in the air, right?
We haven't yet. Yeah, we haven't like actually quite implemented that yet. But what I want to show you is that when I hit refresh here now, we get our unauthorized,
okay, good.
Right? So I tried to call the API, but I don't have the right credentials, mm-hmm. Okay?
And I would have to say that I think that people will agree with me that who are not necessarily familiar with the identity space, that authenticating web pages, most people seem to understand it and they get that it's a thing. That, they don't understand that how to authenticate a web API. It's not quite the same. Like, we're all used to browsers in the past that have popped a dialogue
sure.
and said, log into Windows,
sure.
and like basic authentication, digest, we get that. People aren't super clear on how to truly authenticate correctly against a web API.
Right, and some of the things we've done in the past are subject to certain types of attacks these days. So having done like basic authentication against a web API, if you're doing it from like the browser and your AJAX code, you might be susceptible to cross-site request forgery attacks. So this access token approach that I'm showing you is the recommended way to protect web APIs.
Okay, this is the, in 2017, 2018,
yes.
this is the correct way to do your web
right.
API.
So great. We have my web API. It's running. We are denying access to the anonymous caller. Okay. So this is, again, why the two different tokens have two different audiences. The user is authenticated to the MVC app, but we don't yet have the token to authenticate to the API.
The access token.
The access token, exactly.
Okay.
All right. So let's go get an access token. So to get an access token, my MVC app has to request it
right.
from the token server. The way we requested is we're going to change some of our OpenID Connect configuration.
Is this a resource?
This is another resource.
Because mm-hmm. it's different than a separate app that we would log into. Like you had us log into MVC App A mm-hmm. and MVC App B. This is not a thing to log into.
Right. Think of those are called clients. Basically okay. your UIs.
Right.
Those are the clients.
Those are
the
clients.
The APIs are different.
Okay.
So the OpenID Connect plumbing here, what we're going to do is the first thing I'll do is I'll add a new scope. So I haven't set this up in identity server yet, so I'm starting with the MVC sample.
Sure.
So what I want to do is I want to ask for access to now API 1, for
sure.
example.
Okay? Named API.
Exactly. So this would be some named API. This could be your accounting or human resources API or whatever, however you want to model
Makes sense.
It. Okay. So, and again, this is where I was saying that the protocol overloads scope mm-hmm. for access to two types of things, the identity information and the API access.
Okay.
Again, a bit confusing, but that's the way it
good
works.
Good to be aware of.
Okay. So then the last thing I'm going to change here is, remember this response type was mm-hmm. what I wanted back from the token server?
Right.
And previously it was just ID token saying I only wanted the authentication. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change this slightly, and I'm going to say something I want, a code and an ID token. Now, this gets into some of the bowels of the OAuth protocol with how we obtain access tokens from my server-side application,
mm-hmm.
which might be different than a SPA application, might be different than a native application.
Okay.
So what this is using is what's called the hybrid flow. Previously, we were just doing what was called the implicit flow.
Right.
Now we're using hybrid flow.
Okay.
Implicit meant we only came in through the authorize endpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, is identity server running here? So remember I mentioned in the discovery document, I mentioned the authorize or the authorization endpoint.
Right.
That's the endpoint where the user is delivered in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a UI there. Now that my MVC app also wants an access token, the way the protocol works is that you're also going to have the MVC app programmatically talk to the token server,
right.
and that's through what's called the token endpoint.
So it'll request a token endpoint not by on-the-glass integration in the browser, but by making a back channel call.
And the reason we do this, what ends up happening is the token server delivers through the browser the ID token that we had before,
mm-hmm.
and this new thing called a code.
Okay.
The code is not the access token.
Code is not the access token.
Okay. The code is delivered back to the server-side MVC app,
okay.
and the MVC app uses the back channel and exchanges the code for the access token.
Why the indirection?
So the what they're trying to protect here or do is minimize the exposure of the access token. If the token server delivered the access token via the front channel,
mm-hmm.
and it delivered the token directly back to the client. That means there are a lot of intermediaries who may have seen the token. So the protocol is designed to try to minimize that.
That makes sense.
Okay. So at the expense of an extra round trip. So hybrid means you're using a little bit of one and a little bit of the other. Okay. So that also,
And it's also interesting that scope is taking a list of stuff, but response type is taking a space-separated value.
Yeah, that's just a design choice by the ASP.NET team when they were designing this middleware.
Okay.
Okay. So what I'm going to do here is, now that we're using the token endpoint also, the programmatic endpoint, you need to authenticate there. The MVC app needs to authenticate to the token endpoint. So what's going to happen is the MVC app is now going to be issued some sort of client secret.
Okay, so this is a new thing that the MVC app has to be collecting in its standard login for preparation to call this web API later. Right.
So yes, so what's happening is this allows the MVC app, when it tries to exchange that code for the access token, it will be authenticating as the MVC app to identity server, but it's not as the user, it's as the app itself.
As the app itself.
Exactly. Okay?
That makes sense.
So there's a bunch of security, you know, prevention going on here in terms of, you know, what we're allowing to this. But yes, it's more configuration.
But is it that we are logging in twice? We are going to the token server once on the screen, once in the browser, and once in the back end, twice, and proving ourselves twice.
Yes, all in an attempt to minimize the exposure of the access token.
Yeah.
Okay? Cool. All right. So what this means, this is the MVC code. So what I need to do in my identity server is change the flow, the grant type that we talked about, so that the identity server knows it's going to be coming on these two different endpoints.
Will it functionally change the standard login experience? It'll still will still go to those same front ends.
From the end user's perspective, the interaction through the authorize endpoint, the front channel, will stay the same.
Will stay the same. Okay. Okay. Cool.
So I need to issue this app a secret, and again, secret is an awful secret. You should generate a nice 128-bit random number.
Now, we've seen that this is starting to look, I feel like our app is starting to look like Twitter or Facebook, give us client IDs and client secrets.
Exactly. Just like earlier, we had configured Google, and when you go add your app to Google, they give you a client ID and secret.
For this very reason?
Yeah, this is exactly what Google does.
All right.
Okay.
I'm starting to feel like we're really an identity server now.
Yes, we certainly are. Okay, so we've issued a secret. I've changed the flow. I also now am requesting a new type of resource.
Right,
so I need
You've done all this in the MVC app.
Yes, and I now need to go configure all these comparable things in identity server itself.
Okay, cool.
So over in identity server, what we'll do is we'll go to the client first. We will change this flow to be this thing called hybrid.
Okay.
Once you start to learn the common patterns, then these start to become a little bit more second nature.
Well, I can tell you I'm significantly less freaked out now than I was at the beginning.
Okay, good.
I feel empowered.
You need to read the specs or have it explained to you or read a book on how these work to know, like, what are your options and just which one to pick. So I need to now have a secret. So we have client secrets. What this will do is we can now create a new secret. Okay, and this is where I create the secret. Again, it should be a nice 128-bit random number. We actually do a hashing of this.
Of the
bad secret. But
sure.
The idea is that the assumption is that this is coming from a database.
Mm.
Okay? So what we do is we assume that maybe the database gets compromised.
Oh, wow.
So I don't want the plain text secret in the database, so we hash it.
Okay.
Just like you might for a user's password.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that's why that.
So they are still passing the secret over, but we are not validating against that. We're validating against the hash of that.
Exactly. We do the whole standard hashing comparison to make
that
sure it's the right secret. Okay. And we only do a single hash because it should be a nice high entropy password. When you store users' passwords, you actually do this looping of hashing to protect against a brute force attack of an attacker who stole your database. Because we know we're going to use a nice high entropy secret, we don't need to do a whole bunch of hashing. Just a single hash is good enough.
That SHA-256, is that an extension method that you added to string?
Yes, it is. It's
that's
an extension,
kinda, that's
yeah,
classy.
It's an
I
extension
like
method the identity server defines.
That's cool.
Okay. Okay, so there's client secret. I changed the flow, the grant type. And now I need to tell
API
I need to add API 1. So I haven't yet defined API 1, but I'll go ahead, and because I'm here, add API 1 to the list of allowed scopes.
Okay.
So now the last thing I need to fill in is this thing I didn't do before, which is the other type of resource that identity server is protecting. Okay. So I'm going to create a new API resource. We have a convenience constructor to just fill in the two things that you need, which is the scope name of the API that you're trying to get access to, and then a display name. So this is my, you know, demo API one or whatever.
Cool.
Okay. The convenience constructor is kind of nice because remember earlier I forgot the display. That's what this is making sure I have.
Okay. Does it need to know the location of the API, or does it just need to know its unique name?
No, so that's a good question. The scope, the string right here, is the identifier, the logical identifier for the API.
Okay. Okay. So we've been using things like secret. We don't use that. We use a long number. We've been using names like API1. Mm-hmm. We could use like a Java-style namespace like com.
You could.
BrockAllen.com, you know, whatever.
Yeah, frequently this might be your company, you know, so Acme Corporation or whatever, and this is like your HR API.
I see.
And if you even wanted to do the read-only, I can put dots in here, like read-only versus read-write, you could, you know, it's just a string.
As long
just
as you come up with some scheme that makes sense so that when there's hundreds of them,
yes,
it makes sense to everybody. Cool.
Okay, cool. So we have we're modeling our API.
Oh, and actually,
yes.
When there are hundreds of them, Identity Server can handle that.
Sure, Identity Server.
Right now, you're hard coding these API resources. I can put these in a database. Identity Server can maintain access to hundreds of clients, thousands of clients.
Of APIs and clients,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
This becomes a bit of a design discussion. Mm. Remember, I said there's still other things you have to sit down and think about, like session management. Also, scope design is actually one of the more tricky areas when you're designing this. It's like, should I design a scope for all my APIs or should I design a scope for every one of my APIs? Mm. And you can get too granular with this. So scopes usually are best as a coarse-grained mechanism for modeling an API because fundamentally what this is used for is to prompt the user for consent.
Mm.
Okay? So if you have a consent screen with 30 different APIs, the user's not going to know what to say.
It's interesting that you say that because when you play around on the Google Developer Console, they have such a large amount of stuff, and it's all different groups.
Yes.
Even though they've come together in this way with their own identity server and tokens, it looks overwhelming, and honestly, I don't know. You have to go and individually grant yourself access to all these little APIs.
Yeah.
I really just want a class of API.
Well, yeah, and that's definitely the tricky trade-off that you're, you know, the tricky design that you have to solve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, I think I can run this now. There's Identity Server. Go back to my MVC app, run this guy. And I don't know if I forgot anything.
It's a really fast laptop.
Thanks. I guess I'm logged in, so let's go log out and go back. Okay, trigger this again. Log in as Bob. Hey, look at my consent screen now.
Look at that.
Okay. So now, in addition to all my identity data that's being requested by the client, by the MVC app, it's saying, hey, this MVC app also wants to access your demo API on your behalf. So yes, good.
All right.
And actually, do you remember that flag I had earlier called save tokens that held onto the ID token?
Right.
It also holds onto the access token for
us.
So this access token, actually what I can do is I can take this and I can take a peek inside of it. So there's a nifty little utility called on the website called jot.io, which allows you to peek inside of this.
Okay. J-W-T.io.
J-W-T. And what this is doing is decoding the jot. Okay. Jots are signed, but not encrypted.
Okay.
So this is just decoding it.
Is this using a specific kind of, this isn't just, it doesn't look Base64, it looks like something else.
It's Base64 URL encoded. And then there are sections to it separated by dots. And the first two sections are JSON objects. And the third section at the end is the signature on the rest of it.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
So this then shows you what's inside of the JSON web token.
That's
so this
cool.
is the access token. And this has things like, hey, what client obtained the access token? What user, that's the subject identifier.
Right.
Remember, that's the unique ID of the user.
Mm-hmm.
This is the subject identifier. That is a unique ID for the user. So when you call the API, you'll know which app was using you and which user it was on behalf of.
Very cool.
Okay. And the last thing in here is the scope. This basically says, hey, this is good at API 1. you could build two scopes and have the MVC app get one access token that could be used at both scopes.
Okay, right.
So that's a possibility as well. All right.
Cool.
Anyway.
Now I'm starting to think about when you hit call API, I don't remember us plugging anything in.
Yeah, we haven't done anything yet. No? So if we call this, it'll still be it's still not using the access token.
We haven't done anything to pass it along.
Correct. So that's a good point. Where do you think you would pass this access token when you're invoking the web API? Let's go look at the code for the web API,
okay,
or how we're invoking it.
Sure.
So down here, I have this little call API helper. Okay,
right.
I'm hard coding the URL.
HTTP client.
I use the good old HTTP client, and I'm just calling get on the API URL.
Okay. Well, everything that we've been doing has been a lot of well-known this and well-known that. There's a spec and there's agreed upon strings. I'm assuming that there's some x-something header that we would include.
So, yes, there is a spec for this, and it's called the HTTP spec. Okay? So the HTTP spec defines the authorization header.
Really? So you're just going to use the regular authorization
header? We're going to use the good old authorization header because that's exactly what it's for.
That's cool. I thought they'd make a new one, but you're right.
Nope.
The new RESTful world is using verbs that have been around for years. Why not?
Yeah. Use all the stuff that's already predefined, and proxy servers already know to not log that kind of stuff, so you don't want to leak these access tokens.
Which is interesting. Even though I've been doing HTTP for a long time, a lot of the my understanding of the headers like authorization, it's been fairly opaque. It's a magic string. And I honestly don't know what they're doing to assert that it is correct.
Okay.
So when I do a basic auth and I get back an authorization and an authentication header, magic string. You're going to generate one.
Well, we...
And authenticate against it.
We already generated one here. That's what we pass.
That's
what goes into the authorization
as
header.
As it is. Ah,
and because it's
clean.
And because it's a JSON web token, when it's sent to the API, because it has a signature, We can trust it.
We can validate it.
And we know who it's on behalf of.
So it's tamper-proof. We know all sorts of information about it inside, where it came from, who it was, and whether they have access.
Absolutely.
Or not.
So
it's very clean.
Let's go update our MVC app to then read the access token. So remember, I actually showed you earlier the little bit of the code where you can reach into that dictionary that is in the cookie.
The claims.
Yeah. And this is the...
Get token.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, this is get token async. So I'm going to copy this real quick. And I'm going to pop this here into my code. So there's my access token. I need a semicolon. And then on the HTTP client, there's something called the default request headers. Okay, this allows you to configure the headers of the HTTP request. There's a property called authorization. Okay. And I'm going to instantiate what's called an authentication header value. Somebody didn't quite get the names lined up. But anyway.
That's weird.
There's probably some
Just a string?
Right. Well, actually, the reason it's an object is because the value is actually the header. There's two values in the header. So there are two values. The first value is what's called the scheme. And then there's a white space, and then there's the actual credential.
I see.
So you are overloading one header, but you could pass multiple credential types.
Okay.
So the credential type that we use for our access tokens is called bearer. And then we put the access token in as the value. So this will actually be sent as the authorization header, the hard-coded string bearer, one white space, and then whatever that access token is.
If bearer is such a standard thing and that's such a common thing, it seems like there should be an overload or a convenience thing to make authentication header value. And the fact that authentication header value doesn't line up with the word authorization, you have... could make a header value helper that would have bearer happen for you.
So we have one, and we can do it that way.
Great minds.
Okay. So yes.
Did I just make that up, and you already had it ready to go?
Yeah. So this.
I totally didn't know that.
We have another open source library. So Identity Server is one of our open source libraries. We have another open source library called Identity Model.
Oh.
And that is filling in the gaps that are kind of missing across all the
.NET. All the helper stuff.
All the helper stuff that the .NET framework doesn't have.
So that means that line 47 and 48 is kind of like the standard low-level way of doing it.
Yeah.
And 46 is the I'm
equivalent.
Doing this all day long. I got tired of it.
Yes.
Here's a helper.
Exactly.
And what's going on with context?
That I'm not sure. This.context. Oh, because in the view it's called context, but in the controller
it's
called
context.
HTTP context.
So it's hanging off of the base class.
My copy and paste wasn't quite successful.
All right.
Good.
Great minds think alike on that bearer thing. Because eventually you find yourself doing that multiple times.
Yeah,
you say that's
absolutely.
Not cool.
The thing about the bearer token, the reason they use the word the scheme bearer is because whoever bears the token mm-hmm. can use it. So I think of a bearer token as like your hotel, you know, the plastic room card that you get. Mm-hmm. Anybody can use that to put in the door, you know, as long
well,
as
like
you...
Well, like bearer bonds.
Yeah.
Right? You
well,
lose them, someone else got too. Your money.
So that's where that term comes from.
That makes sense.
Okay. Okay. So this is now going to pass the token, except we still got one more problem.
Because we didn't authorize it on the other side.
We actually didn't even look at
didn't
it
look
in the
at
API.
It. We ignored it entirely.
Exactly.
We did put authorize on the top of the web API, but I don't think we had a scheme or any.
Exactly. So we're, so we have the denied anonymous access. We're passing the token, but nowhere in the web API is it actually inspecting the token to establish trust with who
sure.
the user is.
And I was thinking about that. The, inspecting the token is one thing, but all the validation that one could do, like a lot of people right now will make a call to HTTPS, and they assume that that HTTPS transaction, that this happening over SSL is meaningful. It's just private. There's no proof that I'm talking to who I'm saying I'm talking to. Very rarely do people take apart the cert and use it for validation of identity.
Right.
Are we going to do lots of different checks on that JWT to determine its correctness?
Right. So you're right. With HTTPS, there's nothing authenticating the caller,
right?
So that's what the access token is providing us with, is a means to authenticate the caller. Mm-hmm. It's obviously the API knows that it has to be a JOT, and it is trusting identity server, and so that's part of your trust.
And it will look in there for API 1 and confirm that it's there.
And so all of that stuff, you're right. So for the access token to validate it, yes, there are several steps that need to occur. Validating the signature is a big part of it. We need to make sure that the access token comes from the token server we trust.
Right.
And we need to make sure that the access token is meant for our API as opposed to some other API. So it's kind of like the hotel room key.
Exactly.
I can only use
at one hotel.
Well, one hotel, but even one room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point.
So it's audience scoped.
Okay, and identity server does that validation for me.
Identity server created the token. It's up to your API to do that validation.
Okay. Well,
so
let's see it.
We need something in the API to authenticate that. And what have we used so far in our other apps to do authentication? Right? We've used a middleware.
We've
used cookie. If the credential is a cookie, we use that. If we're trusting identity server, we use OpenID Connect. So in the web API, there is a middleware that, again, I already have the NuGet package added for.
Okay.
I need to add it into my pipeline.
Right.
It will sit in front of MVC.
Right.
So it gets to see the token before my API call. And it is called use JOT bearer authentication.
Nice. And this, that's yours or Microsoft?
This is written by Microsoft.
Really?
Okay. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So that's already there, which is nice and easy. So we have this. And the options that we have on this thing, we have very similar to what we had earlier with OpenID Connect. We have the authority we trust.
And are you pronouncing that JOT, like J-O-T?
J-O-T is the pronunciation of J-W-T. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, that's the official. It even says it in the spec.
Seriously?
They put, quote, JOT, J-O-T.
Okay.
So, who do we trust?
Got it.
Okay, and who are we? Is essentially what these two are showing.
All right.
Good.
Looks good.
All right, I'll run this again.
And it would throw forbidden if it didn't fit that.
No, what ends up happening is if the token is invalid or corrupt or expired, that kind of thing, then it's almost like a no-op. So then the call comes into your API as anonymous. So you still need the authorized.
You still
get the 401, yes.
Okay.
So back here, let's refresh and look at that.
Yes.
Okay.
That's pretty sweet.
So the call came in to the web API with the JSON web token. The JSON web token had all of these claims. The bearer token authentication middleware validated it, took all the claims out of the payload, and turned those into claims on the user object in your you know, ASP.NET code. And so that's how you look in your actual application layer, like, oh, who's the user calling me or what app is calling me? You just go query that claims collection for the claim you know you're looking for.
Very cool.
Okay.
Let's return to the documentation at identityserver.io and look at that diagram, and let's look at what we did today, what our accomplishments are today.
So, yes, here is our big picture for the typical types of applications. Oops, that was not what I wanted to do.
There you go.
There we go. So what we did is we, actually, let me scroll down here. What we did is we set up this security token server using Identity Server, separate ASP.NET Core application. It knows all about your users, all about your apps, all about your APIs. We then built a server-side MVC application to connect to that to authenticate the user. And by doing so, obtained this thing called an ID token and was granted the ability to call an API on behalf of that user with that thing called an access token. So we basically drew, you know, filled in that part of the picture. So there are definitely lots of other scenarios that we didn't have time to cover.
Sure.
But you could build a pure JavaScript SPA style application. You could build a native application that also is trying to invoke those APIs. Again, and we have samples up on our GitHub repo for those. And we have walkthroughs that walk through, you know, setting up code teach you about how to design for those. Okay. But anyway, yes, that's basically what we covered.
Cool. So Identity Server, you can get it at identityserver.io. Yep. Now, help me understand, it is an open source project. People can use it, but it's also, there's a consulting arm, and you can get training.
Yes.
You can do workshops with you.
On the identityserver.io website, we list a lot of our options. We do provide services around Identity Server. So we have... we provide consulting, so mentoring, architectural consulting, knowledge transfer, helping you design what you're building. We can actually do a larger consulting, so we can actually help build proof of concepts for you, or even a full-blown implementation, and we can transfer, you know, ownership to your team. And we also provide production support. So if you, you know, come through our consulting and we help you design your system and you make sure you're doing it right, then we offer production support options. We have a three-day training class around Identity Server. We have a couple of partner companies that are helping us build additional products on top of this. So one example of that would be all the configuration I showed you was all just hard-coded.
Right.
And we do have an Entity Framework implementation, but there's no UI for managing that stuff. So that's an example of one of the products that we have then on top of this.
Very cool. Great example of an open source project and a business behind it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So we have learned all kinds of great stuff about Identity Server. You can check it out at identityserver.io and get involved right now with this great open source OpenID Connect and OAuth 2 framework for .NET. Thank you very much from all of us here at Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Thanks.